The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The Innovators Network.
Welcome to the Heart of Innovation, 60 minutes that could save life and limb with new breakthrough ideas and innovation changing the healthcare landscape. Brought to you by patient advocacy group, thewaytomyheart.org, in partnership with Abbott. Here are your hosts for the Heart of Innovation, Emmy Award-winning journalist and founder of The Way to My Heart, Kim McNicholas, and interventional cardiologist and founder of the Save My Piggies Health Education Series, Dr. John Phillips.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the show. We are diving into the groundbreaking advancement in limb salvage and longevity. Some of these developments are here, some are still under development, but it's really important to know all that's in the pipeline so that you can have a productive conversation with your physician about options that could save your limb as well as your life. You need to be ready for resistance, though. What you're going to hear today is not in the standard textbook for medical school as of yet. Innovation, though, is moving at the speed of light, and textbooks just don't keep up with new evidence-based medicine. Joining us in this discussion will be Howard Leonhardt, the executive chairman and CEO of Leonhardt Ventures and Leonhardt Health. Thank you so much, Howard, for joining us. We're going to get to you in just a moment. But first, I got to say hello to my co-host. I can't skip over that, John. You're too hard to miss.
Oh, gosh. No. Welcome. Happy Saturday. Looking forward to this conversation. I'm still struggling with a cold. So if you make me laugh, I'll go into one of my coughing fits. So I will try not to do that. But I love the thank you. I love the idea of discussing potentially anti-aging and this whole notion of, you know, how old am I chronologically and then how old am I like from a biological standpoint? There's so much buzz around living longer, but not just living longer, but living, having better quality of life as you get older. I mean, it's great to get to 90, but if you're kind of bedbound in 90, is that really good quality of life? And there's so much just talk about it. It's pretty exciting to get into this. And I know Howard has done a lot with, you know, innovation. And so this is going to be a good conversation. So looking forward to it.
Yeah. So I think before we kick off the discussion, I think it's time for some words of wisdom.
Dr. John Phillips, spectacular vascular moment of inspiration.
Well, so again, on the anti-aging theme, I thought, all right, let me find out who in record history, verified history, who the oldest person was. And this was a French woman, and I'm probably going to mangle her last name, but Jean-Louise Calment, C-A-L-M-E-N-T. So she lived 122 years and 164 days. So, and evidently aged 120.
I love that they count the days at that point.
Well, so the thing of it is, if you make it to 90, you have another four, I think, years life expectancy. So you kind of select yourself into this upper echelon of longevity. But anyway, so 122 years and some odd days, she was pretty functional, I believe, up until even at 121. But so she has just kind of, this is a simple quote, very jovial, but I also like it. And she's quoted as saying, I always keep a smile. I attribute my long life to that. I believe I will die laughing. That's part of my program. So you and I have a lot of fun. We try to keep it light. Yes, we talk about some serious stuff, but we're always smiling. So to Miss Calment, up in wherever you're at, congratulations on making it to 122 years on this planet.
I think it's absolutely brilliant. And I love that. I don't think that even warrants a discussion, because I think that just those words are incredibly powerful. I'd be curious because I see Howard smiling over there. I'm sure that it resonates with him. And I'm sure that's one of those things that really drives him every single day to continue to innovate in the world of longevity. I'm sure he wants to be living a long, healthy life with a big smile on his face. Right, Howard?
That's correct. And a study just came out showing that people that have a positive attitude, laugh and smile more, have one third less chance of dying early from heart disease. So it's a good science and backed by science now that laughter and smiling and a positive spirit contribute to longevity.
Well, I'm sure you're going to live a long, healthy life because, you know, one of the things that struck me about you so long ago was your contagious energy, your spirit, your passion, you know, that big smile. And I remember interviewing you for some story. I think we did at Forbes magazine. And then we continued that relationship when I knocked on your door and said, hey, would you mind being one of the judges for the Extreme Tech Challenge with Sir Richard Branson? And he was one of our judges at the world's largest consumer electronics show in Las Vegas, where we presented the top 10. And he and a few others had that tough task of figuring out which threats were going to be presented to Richard Branson. But I couldn't have picked a better person than Howard with his innovative prowess. And
is that how you guys first met? You interviewed him, Kim?
Yep.
Oh. How long ago was that?
Oh, my goodness. Was that like 2016, 20, maybe 2015? No, that was earlier than that. That had to have been about 2014.
Yeah, something around there. I need my longevity memory.
We're just aging ourselves. That's something new we need to develop, right?
Yes, exactly. So, Howard, tell us a little bit about yourself, your education, you know, kind of what you studied and the early years, so to speak. We were talking before the show about a stent graft that we all, or I know very well, that is used for AAAs.
Thanks. And thanks for the opportunity to be here today. And hello, everybody. And I look forward to talking about limb salvage, which is the topic of the day. In the 1980s, I graduated from Anoka Technical College with a degree in international trade. I attended University of Minnesota, and I started helping small manufacturers of medical devices to reach export markets. And along the way, I met with a lot of doctors, met with a lot of engineers, and started to have some of my own ideas. And it's always hard to tell my story short, but the extremely short version, in the 1980s, we developed the Polycath cardiovascular balloon catheter. It was my first patent. And we had modest success. But in the 1990s, we developed the Talent stent graft, the Taheri Leonhardt stent graft for periaortic aneurysms, and the first stent valve. Both of these were innovative that instead of cutting open your chest, breaking open your ribs, clamping the aorta, and taking 4 hours to hand sew a graft in place, we made a small puncture in the groin, ran a catheter up, and basically springs popped open and replaced the hand sewing to hold the graft in place to stop an aortic aneurysm from rupturing. And, you know, we've lost a lot of great people to aortic aneurysm ruptures, including Albert Einstein, Lucille Ball, John Ritter. The list could go on and on. And we developed a system where today it's the leading system in the world for repairing aortic aneurysms. Somewhere between 30 and 50% of all aortic aneurysms in the world are repaired with the system we had developed in those days. We sold it to Medtronic, so they have it in their lineup. And then we had that stent, and we put a heart valve inside and developed the first system to not crack open your chest and put a heart valve inside, but to do that with the catheter. And now, more relevant to the discussion today, we've adapted that same aortic stent with a pump inside. And people that may have bad blood flow to the legs, we place this pump that moves blood very rapidly in a pulsating manner from the aorta down to the feet. And this is part of our armamentarium of technologies to treat limb salvage. There's a lot more to the story, and maybe we'll touch a little bit about the latest focus is on aging reversal. And to, again, cut through the story there, we are positively, absolutely sure with the technology we developed, we can reverse age in anyone 10 years. And I look forward to telling you a little bit more about how we do that.
Kim, there's a lot of meat on this bone.
I know, exactly. I think
we've got about 90 seconds left.
I think we should just go to break, and I think we extend the next one and come back. We'll leave it with a cliffhanger with so much to unpack. Stay with us.
Leg health can indicate risk for heart attack, stroke, and amputation. If you have leg pain or cramps while walking, get checked for peripheral artery disease, or PAD. PAD is plaque buildup in mainly the leg arteries. Be sure to ask your physician for an ankle brachial index, also called an ABI test, where they use blood pressure cuffs to analyze the blood pressure in your legs. If they discover you have arterial plaque that's limiting blood flow to your feet, medicine and a regimented walking program are frontline treatment. If PAD is in its advanced stages, your physician may schedule a surgical intervention. Minimally invasive tools are available to remove plaque and restore blood flow, including Cardiovascular Systems Diamondback 360 atherectomy system, which sands away plaque that is a hard calcium. It's important to discuss all options with your physician, and if told you have no options, get a second opinion. Take a stand against amputation. For more information, go to standagainstamputation.com. That's standagainstamputation.com.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
And welcome back to the show. We have a really special guest today. He's an incredible healthcare innovator. We have Howard Leonhardt with us. And before the break, we were talking about all of the different innovations that he and his team have developed that have had such an incredible impact on aneurysm treatments and heart treatments. And then we were just starting to touch on now what he's doing to help with limb salvage for patients who have one of the most prevalent and deadliest diseases that most have never heard of. Yet impacts literally 1 in 3 diabetics over the age of 50, 1 in 5 adults over the age of 60. It's called peripheral artery disease. It's poor circulation and mainly the legs. You get the plaque buildup in those arteries and the blood flow is restricted to the feet, and doctors may try to open up those arteries. They may be able to be successful. They may not. And some end up with an amputation. And Howard has a new technology that he is looking to bring to market. And it's interesting because, you know, Howard and I go way back, as we talked before the break, with the Extreme Tech Challenge. He was a judge for that. I interviewed him on some cardiovascular things for Forbes. And then I had just reached out to him, John, just this week, because I noticed that he was doing something with limb salvage. And I thought, oh my gosh, what the heck? I have to get on the phone with him. And he jumped on a Zoom with me, and I was just sitting there in awe on all of the things that he is doing now to help save not only limbs, but also lives.
So real quick, I'm on call this weekend, and about an hour and a half ago, I was called to help one of our surgeons. They had a gentleman who's 93 who had a ruptured aneurysm. It wasn't a AAA, so it was above kind of the takeoff of the artery in the arm here. So it's kind of, we call it a thoracic rupture. And so we used a stent graft, which is what Howard helped develop. It literally took us 20 minutes to do this. Okay. And that is just, we don't think twice about it, because I said, this is the easiest case I'll do all weekend, but yet it's so complex. And that's what I love, interacting with engineers and inventors and people that can take my idea to the next level, or at least help grow that. And so I love having these conversations. And Howard, I'd love to hear about what it is that you're trying to do to improve blood flow in patients, I'm assuming in the lower extremities, who just don't have that ability to kind of have their plumbing's bad, and you want to help fix their plumbing.
John, first, you know, it warms my heart to hear what you just described about, did you say it was today or yesterday?
It was today. It was an hour and a half ago.
It's just remarkable for me to hear that, you know. So we brought forward the first stent graft that was to do just what saved this gentleman's life today. And in 1991, and we brought a surgeon from Japan to review our invention. Our leading investor was Nippon Zien Company of Japan. We were developing balloon catheters. They invested in balloon catheters, and we developed the stent graft in 1991 as a side project. we had a fish tank in a room, and we brought the leading surgeon, Dr. Hirose from Japan, and we showed him the stent graft, the thing that you just did. He said it was a terrible idea. He said it was going to embarrass the company. He said that it was never going to work. The gentleman from Nippon Zen had his arm around me. He said, Howard, please just focus on balloon catheters. Don't fool around with these wild and crazy ideas. You're going to embarrass our company. We're going to lose face, and stop it right now. And I stopped it. So we had it ready to save lives in 1991. And because of one surgeon being grumpy, we dropped it. And then in 1994, we started seeing articles of two other companies, Mintech and EVT, that had come forward with a similar product. And then all of a sudden, we had to catch up from being third and being back to number one. But Kim had mentioned offline that, with the limb salvage work, you're a lot of the people on this call are involved with innovations for limb salvage, and there's resistance. The status quo does not want to hear about changing their ways. They're stuck in their ways. So our way for limb salvage, and maybe you want to make a comment, John, before I go into that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll just say that I try to, Kim and I do our best to be objective, I think. But you know, at some point you're an umpire, you call it the way you see it. I'm not a surgeon, so I don't have the opportunity. I can't pivot to a bypass or, God forbid, just an amputation. And so I need to work within my skill set. And so that forces us, I think, to just kind of be very, very good through trial and error at getting better blood flow minimally invasively. But if I'm somebody who doesn't have that skill set, and I see that my livelihood and my passion and my career is being threatened, I'm certainly going to get defensive about that. And really what we all try to do is just raise awareness. And to Kim's point offline, let's all work together. Like, there's plenty of opportunity for us to work together. And what was done 10 years ago, to your point as well, in 1991, it's a crazy idea to do this. And now it's 2024. And a 93-year-old person we treated with a device that you helped develop. That's crazy to me, because this gentleman would have died easily, and now hopefully he'll survive. So for me, it's like, hey, let's lock arms, let's work together, and let's continue to innovate, because what I do on a daily basis, it works, but it doesn't work long enough, and we're constantly trying to figure out what is the next best thing. And you know, maybe you have it, and I'm excited to hear more about it.
So I'm curious, you faced resistance when it came to the heart. Are you seeing that same resistance when it comes to your innovation with the legs?
Absolutely. Now we are, doing well designed research. First of all, let me explain to the audience our approach, and we've been at this for a while. And I want to lay as a understanding of our history, we implanted muscle stem cells to repair our first animal heart in 1988, working with Dr. Ray Scow and Dr. George McGovern in Pittsburgh. In 1987, Dr. Robert Becker published this book called The Body Electric, and it changed my life. I reached out to him after reading the book, and we began to work together on limb salvage in 1987. He published the book in 85, but I didn't read it right away. Published in the Journal of American Heart Association Circulation, our first bioelectric paper for limb salvage in 1999. In 2001, our team completed the first ever in the history of the world muscle stem cell repair of a human heart in the Netherlands, in Rotterdam, working with Dr. Patrick Sarois, Dr. Doris Taylor from the United States, and Dr. Warren Sherman from the United States, that flew over for the case. Our very first case, we broadcast live to about 10,000 people at the EuroPCR. So we've been working for many, many years on a regeneration with a combination of bioelectric stimulation and a combination of stem cell or biologic injections. And so our approach for limb salvage right now with our startup VascuStem, and to also help understanding of how we do things, we have an innovation accelerator in Irvine, a staff of engineers and biologists and myself, and all day, every day, we work on innovations. And coming out of that innovation accelerator, we have 38 different startups that have spun out. One of them is called VascuStem, and VascuStem is focused on improving blood flow in the legs and the feet, accelerating the healing of diabetic ulcers. And, you know, both of those things fit into limb salvage. So our approach is, there's one approach if it's a mild case and we're catching it early. And there's a different approach that's very similar, but more invasive if it is advanced. I'm going to start with the advanced because I think that is, you know, the greatest technological feat. So if somebody has, they're on the path to have a limb amputation, we implant a pump under their skin. We refill that pump that has catheters running down the leg every day with clotho-expressing mesenchymal stem cells, with immature myoblasts, with exosomes, Wharton's jelly, amniotic fluid, and a bioelectrically enhanced platelet-rich fibrin. And when you, it's basically stem cells with a super nutrient hydrogel or a fertilizer of sorts. And then in the same patient, we implant a micro implant like a pacemaker. And that pacemaker causes the expression of proteins. And we have a whole suite of proteins for arteriogenesis, a fancy word for growing blood vessels, but growing blood vessels that last and have a true endothelium lining. And then we have a whole nother set of signals for increasing the muscle strength. And we have a whole nother set of signals for basically getting the muscle that's available to secrete proteins that fight back against limb salvage, fight back against aging, improve the performance of the muscle, improve the flow of the blood. And in those signals, we have things like ENOS, nitric oxide synthase, which dilates all the blood vessels that are still there. That's the active ingredient of Viagra that everybody understands that increases blood flow. We do the same thing in the legs. We did a 16-patient clinical trial in Czech Republic, 16 people that were days away from losing their legs to amputation, and with only one injection session of only the stem cells, nothing else, not the nutrient hydrogel, not the pump, not the bioelectric, just stem cells alone that were derived from fat tissue, we were able to stave off amputation in 12 out of 16. Now, we were angry that we lost the four, and it haunts me that four people in Czech Republic are walking around without a leg. And I'm kind of angry with the ethics committee there, because when we saw that we were going to lose those four, we wanted to go back in and deliver more cells, and we wanted to do bioelectric stimulation, and they said no. So that's, you know, an example of resistance, despite the fact that we did dozens and dozens of animals and carefully moved it forward. But in short, if I had a friend or a family member that was about to be amputated, I would hit them repeatedly with stem cells and nutrient hydrogel, and I would bioelectrically stimulate their legs to grow new blood vessels and improve the strength of the muscle. I would have them exercise with our BodStim suit, which exercising with the suit secretes proteins from muscle that stave off diabetes, that stave off amputation, that also improve overall health. And then if they were very serious, I would put our second heart stent with a pump in their aorta that serves as a second heart. So if somebody has a weak heart, some of the people that have are heading towards amputation, it's partially because their heart is so weak that it's not able to push the blood very well all the way down to the feet. And we put a pump inside of a stent, the same stent that we've used in 600,000 patients for aortic aneurysm repair, but this time we put a pump inside. And when we put that there in your aorta, it greatly improves the flow down to the feet. And those things in combination, and you know, as a technology person, I think we fight with technology until we lose. And you know, in Czech Republic, they wouldn't let us fight the fight for those four people that we lost. I just don't understand. Like,
coming up after the break, we're going to continue to fight the status quo and continue our conversation with Howard. So stay with us.
3 years ago, my symptoms started with leg pain and leg cramps while walking.
Me too, with a tightness in my calves.
Well, do you know, my doctor thought that my leg cramps were a side effect of the statin he prescribed me.
Well, my doctor just brushed them off as another symptom of old age.
Mine thought the pain was radiating from my spine.
My doctor blamed my neuropathy on diabetes until I got a wound on my foot that just wouldn't heal.
Yeah, it turns out we all have peripheral artery disease, also known as PAD.
It's plaque buildup mainly in the leg arteries causing poor circulation.
For me, the diagnosis came too late and I lost my leg, but that does not have to happen to you.
No, it does not, because there are treatment options available if you're diagnosed early enough.
PAD, peripheral artery disease. If you've been experiencing leg pain, leg cramps, or neuropathy when walking, and your doctor isn't hearing you, we are. We are the Way to My Heart, the largest support network for peripheral artery disease patients, and we want to help you get back on your feet again. Visit our website at thewaytomyheart.org or call our LegSaver hotline, 415-320-7138. Your life and limb could depend on it.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
Welcome back, everybody, and thank you for joining us. We're continuing our conversation with Howard, the mastermind behind what sounds like some pretty amazing technology using kind of the body electric and some stem cells. So Howard, as you were describing this process, walk me through. Let's say I'm on the verge of having a major amputation. I have very poor blood flow in my leg. Tell me in a kindergarten language, what you're going to do to my leg, or what are you going to do to try to help me save my limb?
Thanks. And again, it depends a little bit on the severity, but obviously if you're heading towards amputation, it has to be quite severe. So the short of it is that we would take a needle and syringe and we would mix clotho-expressing MSCs with a whole bunch of nutrients within hydrogel, exosomes, Wharton's jelly, amniotic fluid. These are like miracle growths. And we would inject with the needle up and down your leg, 16, 30 injections all over. And
it's in the muscle? So are you injecting in the soft tissue, the muscle, or where?
Primarily into the muscle, but, you know, varying depths. And the goal is to grow new blood vessels very quickly. And the goal is also to dilate the vessels that are present to provide more flow. Now, if vessels are blocked, this isn't going to do anything for that. This is going to cause the existing vessels to create new branches, the existing vessels to get larger, the leaky vessels that might be there that are the beginning to try to self-correct the problem, allow them to grow into large vessels with true endothelium lining, meaning that they don't leak. When you have ischemia in your body tries to grow new blood vessels, but oftentimes it doesn't do a very good job. It grows a network of small leaky vessels that don't carry blood very well. And by delivering these proteins that in these injections, the stem cells, we basically aid the body into transforming what it started to do on its own, but for some reason didn't finish the job. And instead of having a bunch of leaky small vessels, they become larger blood vessels with that don't leak that carry a good amount of blood. There are other technologies, including stents that, you know, we have worked with in the past that open up arteries, and Kim has worked with lasers. And we would suggest that anybody that was heading towards that also get that technology, because you want to open up those vessels. And then we also get muscles to secrete proteins that are beneficial to the health of not only your legs, but your entire body. I know it's hard to cover in a short answer.
No. So how does you inject the material in the subcutaneous tissue or in the muscle? So then there are signals that the tissue or that material elutes, or how does it get to the depths and the vasculature?
Again, the body is full of all kinds of mechanisms for self-repair. And for some reason, when you scrape your knee, we've all had that happen. A bioelectric signal goes to the brain that says injury, injury. The brain sends a bioelectric signal back to the knee that says start secreting STF1 and PDGF. These are known to be stem cell homing factors. And then when those secrete out of your damaged, scraped knee, stem cells that are primarily residing in the bone marrow and closest to the knee, it would be within the bone marrow of your thigh muscle, which is chock full of stem cells. And incredibly, they get a sniff of that STF1 and PDGF that is secreted out of your knee, and they bubble up out of the bone marrow, miraculous healing ability of the body, and then they migrate to the source, another miracle of healing, and then they gather at the knee, and they start to starve. And so they send a signal to the brain, hey, there's a bunch of us stem cells here. We're starving because there's only so much nutrients. So the brain then reverses the polarity, drops the voltage, and communicates to those stem cells to switch from the recruitment and proliferation mode, fancy words for get to the site and multiply, and to the differentiation mode, a fancy word for tell the stem cells to become what the microenvironment tells them to become. And all of what we're doing, and this is what the famous line from Dr. Robert Becker, and by the way, we lost Robert Becker, so Michael Levin, myself, and others, we carry his name forward in respect. I started working with him in 1988, and he passed away in, I think, 2011. His famous entry was, there must be a bioelectric phenomenon of regeneration, because right before the salamander tail starts to grow back, the electrical signal changes. So that was the origin of our entire field, this relationship between bioelectric signaling and regeneration. He didn't know that there was stem cells be recruiting. They didn't even have the term stem cells back in when he published the book. And I'll save the long story, but basically the short version is, we take how the body repairs itself, how the body builds itself in the first place when you're in your mother's womb, bioelectric signaling, stem cells, and support factors and growth factors, and we just enhance, amplify, and extend those to be able to, animals grow their tails back. And we're just using the exact same method that causes a salamander to grow his tail back on a limb salvage case.
Wow. I mean,
I'm watching John's face because this is what he does on a daily basis. He's in there trying to open up these blocked vessels. And I'm curious, with all of this, don't you wish you had those injections for some of those limbs that you couldn't save?
Well, yeah, because, to Howard's point, we can open up the bigger vessels. They don't stay open as long as we'd like. But if you can help recruit and create, angiogenesis or new vessels, that will help the body heal. I'm just thinking, like, does this translate to, I've got a bad liver failure. Can you regenerate liver tissue, or can you regenerate other tissue in the body, other organs, using this theory?
Absolutely. So, that case that I mentioned earlier in Rotterdam, we regenerated the first human heart on the planet Earth. And that lady is still kicking around today. And she had a highly damaged heart. We injected muscle stem cells into the scar tissue of her post-heart attack heart. And we grew strips of muscle and her heart got strong and she no longer had heart failure. And we went on to publish in the Journal of American College of Cardiology. And then we did a phase 1 study, published that, a phase 2 study, and a phase 2-3 study. It's still, not in widespread use. And then along the way, of course, we figured out a way to do it much better. And so we now are moving forward with that. And to partially answer that question, our big dream is to create a womb for adults. And absolutely, positively, sometime when they watch this show 30, 40, 50 years from now, they're going to laugh saying, they were talking about the future 50 years ago. 50 years from now, 90% of people will be repaired, not in a hospital with drugs or devices or doctors, sorry. They will enter a regeneration chamber. They will enter a womb for adults, artificial intelligence. When catheters and leads need to be delivered to the liver that you just described, or kidney or heart, robotics will deliver, not a doctor, sorry, and it will be all automatic. I'm more positive about that occurring than my Vikings, my boyhood team, ever winning the Super Bowl before I die.
Let's just hope
I'm a Packers fan,
fit,
too.
Let's just hope you fit the algorithm too, and you're not one of those outliers. Well, coming up next, right here on the Heart of Innovation, we're going to talk not only about how Howard Leonhardt is looking to save limbs, but also lives. How are you going to live longer? Let's find out next, right here on the Heart of Innovation. Stay with us.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
Welcome back, everybody. Continuing a fantastic conversation. My mind is like running a thousand miles a minute here. So, Howard, you had touched on, obviously, the stem cell injections, but then also an implant, which sounds kind of like a TEMS unit, not only for the leg to kind of help move things around, is that to stimulate muscle, but then also a suit that you can wear to help you walk. And then at the break, too, you mentioned clotho, a term I've never heard before. So let's unpack what we're talking about here.
It's the only word to kind of fit everything in.
It
right?
is. That there's unpacking here.
The good news is the BodStim suit is called BodStim, BodStim.com. It's available now, and it's FDA cleared. It's FDA cleared for augmenting the benefits of exercise, especially related to release from muscle of beneficial exokines and myokines. Fancy words that say secretions of proteins that improve your health. Naturally, when you exercise, you secrete about 3 to 6% increase of circulating clotho in your body if you exercise 2 or 3 times a week. If you exercise with our patented BodStim suit, we increase the circulating clotho. We've had patient last week, 230% increase. Clotho, 3,700 papers published, John, since 1997. It's hard to summarize all those in a short thing, but a short description. But a paper came out last year, 31% higher chance to die before your expected medium age. So if you're Caucasian like us, we're supposed to die at like 82. If you're low in circulating clotho, 31% chance you're not going to make it to 82. Now, the opposite is being proven. If you go not only to normal, but go above normal, both in animals and humans, it's showing that you can go beyond 82, and not only just go beyond 82, but have a healthy time period after 82. So clotho is very important. And the primary signaling of this suit that's patented is increasing circulating clotho. And it basically stimulates your muscles. If exercise is medicine, exercise with the BodStim suit is super medicine. And to kind of break it down into terms that people on the phone could understand, if you walk with this suit turned on, with the electrical stimulation turned on for 20 minutes, it's equivalent of getting the benefits of 2 to 4 hours of walking without the suit, if you look at the beneficial excretions of protein. So we just help you to get more out of your exercise. We believe in exercise especially for elderly, and I'll stop there.
So can I can go online and buy one of these suits? Is it like a wetsuit or?
I mean, exactly. It's basically a wetsuit with a bunch of electrodes and a cell phone size stimulator that goes in the pocket. You download an app on the App Store called the BodStim app, and we've simplified it completely. We have a professional version and we have a consumer version. In the consumer version, you just hit start and it automatically runs through the program. Now, we recommend using the suit for 1 hour, 2 times or 3 times a week. And during that 1 hour, we have 5 minutes of warm up, just kind of stretch, 20 minutes of exercise, and then 35 minutes of just having the stimulation on while you're on the computer or watching TV or relaxing, whatever you want to do, read a magazine, and then has 5 minutes of a fully statin signal. So we load into the BodStim suit the clotho signal, the fully statin signal, and the exercise program, and that's 1 hour. Now, if you want to just, you know, get it down to 20 minutes, you can hit a few buttons to get down to just 20 minutes, but we recommend 1 hour, but you only have to exercise 20 minutes of that 1 hour. The rest of it, you just leave it on and it's kind of a tingling feeling while you're on the computer watching TV or whatever you want to do, cooking in the kitchen.
Go ahead, Kim. Sorry.
I might derail here because I'm still stuck on, I mean, I'm a little lazy. Can I just take a clotho supplement? pop a clotho pill?
That's what a lot of people have told us. Turmeric and ginger and curcumin, vitamin D, these things have been shown to slightly elevate clotho, but we're looking at like 1 or 2%. The suit, I just looked at the last 4 patients. It was 43%, 29%, and 15%. Every 4% increase of clotho that's sustained over time is expected to increase your health span by 1 year. Now, that's a very big claim, and I want to be careful that it's not totally proven. What is proven from data is every 100 PG per ml decline, which is basically 4% decline in clotho, takes away a year of your health span. That has been proven through you know, 30,000 patient study. And now we're trying to prove the opposite, that if you increase it, every 4% increase in that patient that just came in last week, 42% increase, that's 10 years of extra health span for that patient that we're expecting. Of course, you know, we need more data to absolutely pound the table and say this is proven, but trending is leading in that direction.
Is this something that can be incorporated into, there are supervised exercise therapy programs, supervised exercise therapy, SET, set programs for peripheral artery disease in particular. Some of the hospitals have them. Is this something that they can add into their armamentarium to be able to accelerate the process for these patients in these 12-week programs? And if so, is this something that's going to still have a long-term effect for these patients, even if they can't use this technology beyond those 12 weeks?
Absolutely. And we would recommend that in any one of those programs. I didn't mention that one of the other properties that have been proven with Clotho or Clotho is if you increase it, there's a property of autophagy. It took me a while to understand that term, but it basically means dissolving plaque and arteries and the heart valves and within the brain. And certainly within animals, absolutely multiple animal studies have showed if you increase the circulating Clotho level, the plaque in their arteries dramatically reduces. The plaque in their heart valve and the amyloid plaque in their brain that may lead to Alzheimer's or dementia is dramatically reduced. Now, human studies are underway. The human studies have not absolutely confirmed what has been confirmed in animals, but the early trending results are showing it absolutely reduces calcification of arteries, heart valves, and within the brain.
So then the ability to increase Clotho in an animal is different than the ability for us to, as humans, to increase it? Are you using something like the BOD stim in these animals to increase it?
We're losing something like the BOD stim in the animals, or we're injecting the Clotho. You can inject the Clotho gene, you can inject the Clotho protein, and we are developing other products. We have Clotho Pod, which is just like the insulin pods, and we're filling it up with Clotho, and you slap it on your thigh, and a needle comes out and goes in with their phone app into your thigh and injects it. We're sending people to offshore sites to get Clotho-expressing MSC injections or infusions. We've patented genetically modifying stem cells to overexpress the Clotho protein, and we're aware and observing the work of others that are injecting the Clotho gene. We think there's a place for all of it. Unfortunately, Clotho gene injections, just the cost to manufacture the gene is $50,000 per patient. So it's not available to the common person. And wow, we've developed a Clotho patch. That's more in the line of what you were talking about, Kim. It's like a testosterone patch. It's like a nicotine patch, but it's a Clotho patch. It's not released yet. We're just in animal studies yet. But a lot of people have told us the same thing. You know, I love your exercise suit, but to be honest, I don't like the exercise. And we feel bad and we tell them, please, like, exercise. But if they don't want to, they don't have to. And for that group, we're developing a Clotho patch where you just slap it on the inside of your thigh and it will time release the Clotho with electroiontophoresis built into the patch to open up the pores so it seeps better. Now, the Clotho patch is not going to work as well as a Clotho gene injection or infusion or injection of Clotho expressing MSCs, but dramatically less expensive. And, you know, it's a tough thing in medicine, you know, balancing cost and affordability with safety and efficacy.
Coming up right here on the Heart of Innovation, I want to ask what it's going to take to bring down the cost and drive worldwide adoption, mass adoption of this. So stay with us right here on the Heart of Innovation.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We're wrapping up a very interesting show about anti-aging, and I'm learning about Clotho and biostim suits. And so, Howard, this technology sounds expensive. I imagine your suits are not cheap. And like with anything, things are expensive, but then the cost comes down. Do you envision this being more more readily available for the common person, as opposed to, I'm also imagining that like athletes and people are buying these things that can afford to have some luxury.
The A regular suit is selling for $2,495, and that is rather expensive. We do, you know, set up financing, so put $200 down and pay $29 a month or something like that. We're trying to reduce the cost of production, and that doesn't include, you know, amortizing all of the clinical trials. We're about to launch a clinical trial with the suits with Dr. Wilson Tang at Cleveland Clinic, and he's going to send half the patients that are suffering of heart failure and discharged from the hospital with heart failure with the suit, and the other half without. It's a sarcopenia study, that particularly patients that have wasting away muscle. Yep. And it's already shown that heart failure patients that keep their muscle up have better quality of life, less hospitalizations that don't, and we're going to try to aid that. And all these, you know, Cleveland Clinic doesn't do that study for us for free. That study alone, you know, might cost us in the millions. So sure. Somehow we got to.
It's not. No, I hear you. It's not cheap. I hear you.
But really your foray into these med spas where people and even we were talking before the break about the SET programs. And if, you know, industry, if hospitals or, you know, real programs, facilities would buy these. They could end up sterilizing before each use, but they could bring in patients there at the clinics who could maybe have a membership or make them so they just have co-pays and it's reimbursed by insurance. Is that the direction you're going, at least initially?
Exactly. And so people can come in to a variety of different places and basically rent these suits for an hour or a half hour. And it's less costly. And then we can disinfect them and have them ready for the next person that comes in the next hour. So that the going rate in Orange County is $130 per session to use the suit. And you come in and you have a professional trainer that's walking through an exercise routine with you. You get to wear the suit. You have supervision and help. But then when you finish, you just hand the suit in and the trainer disinfects it and has it ready for their next client the next hour. So that does bring the cost down. The other thing is we are developing less expensive stimulators and less expensive ways to, if you don't wear the suit and we just put the electrodes on your body without the suit, we can possibly get the cost down to like $400. And so that's more time consuming. So you lose the labor. The suit has everything in the right position. With the manual one, you'd have to stick the electrodes on your body and you have to follow a diagram and they sometimes come off and it's a little bit inconvenient. We had that at the beginning and people were saying that it was too inconvenient because they would go to move in their exercise and the electrode would come off and then they'd have to take time to reestablish it. So then we made the suit that everything stays right where it is. You just slip it on. It's super easy. Hit one button. You don't have to do any labor at all. And in the U.S. market, when it was labor and lower cost versus no labor and simplicity, we went forward with the no labor and simplicity because most people just don't want to fool around. And where the electrodes go on your back, you need somebody else to help you. So you can't even do it by yourself if you don't have the suit. You've got to, you know, ask your wife or somebody or somebody in the gym to put them on. So, but that's lower cost. So if you went that way,
sure,
$400 instead of $24.95.
Thank you so much, Howard. Gosh, so much here. We really appreciate all the work that you're doing. We're definitely going to have a part two of this conversation. Meantime,
100%.
Right? Where can we send people if they have questions, they want to take a look at the suit and the other technology that you're developing?
The simplest one is bodstim.com, BODSTIM. And one thing I didn't say is that we're doing research where we patented downregulation of the FAB-P4 protein and upregulation of Clotho. And if you type FAB-P4, I remember FAB-4, the Beatles, FAB-P4 and Clotho and the word diabetes, you'll find if you bring Clotho, FAB-P4 down and Clotho up, if somebody's in pre-diabetes, they won't go into diabetes. And we're hoping we're going to be able to prove people that are in diabetes will reverse out. And that's going to be built in the suit in the future. We can't release with the FDA the FAB-P4 downregulation yet until we finish all of the safety studies. But in the future, this is going to be like a video game. You'll get the basic suit with Clotho and Follistatin, but you can download the diabetes reversal program. You can download the dementia prevention program. You can download the blood pressure modulation program. You can download the depression program. Our vision for this is that if you had this suit, there's going to be multiple applications for it, and you don't have to rebuy the suit. You just have to download the software to improve it. Now, all of those things require the FDA to give us permission for each one of those applications, but we are working on it.
And this is The Heart of Innovation.
You've been listening to The Heart of Innovation with Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips. Our mission is to help patients live a better quality of life through comprehensive education, real-time support, and high-touch advocacy in partnership with thewaytomyheart.org and Abbott. Our purpose is to reduce the 1.5 million heart attacks and strokes and nearly 200,000 amputations annually. For more information regarding topics you've heard discussed on today's program, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. The Heart of Innovation is for educational and informational purposes only, and advice and views shared are not a substitute for medical advice from your own supervising physician. Do not act on any information provided in this show without the explicit consent from your own healthcare team. If you think you are having a medical emergency, call your local emergency number or go to the nearest hospital or emergency room.
This show is distributed by the Innovators Network. For more information and other great shows and content, visit theinnovators.network.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.